Kia ora and welcome back to another episode of Build Aotearoa. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh. Last year I was figuring out what to do with Homestyle Green and I recorded a bunch of episodes and turns out that one of them slipped through and didn't ever get released. And when I was sending out a bunch of emails this past week, trying to get some people on the show, one of those was to Benji Simmons at Stark because I have been following them for a while and I know that they're doing some really interesting and really good stuff for building performance, particularly around doors and windows. And Benji mentioned the interview that we had recorded nearly a year ago now, which is highly embarrassing for me. So anyway, I'm glad that Benji did remind me about that interview. I've gone back and had a listen, and the interesting thing is that it's all still completely relevant. Now, we do talk about the implementation of H1, the new H1 standards. That has now been completed. So when we're talking about the changes coming up in November, that was November 23. Unfortunately, though, the thinking, I don't think, has moved on much since then. So Benji talks about the idea of schedule method thinking, and the industry is very much still in that mindset as far as I can tell. So as much as the codes have changed, people have now accepted, some begrudgingly, that H1 has been updated, there's still a long way to go, and I don't know if the vast majority of the industry has moved on all that much. So everything that Benji talks about here is completely relevant. And there was nothing that I felt needed to be cut out or changed or amended to this. And they're still doing great stuff out in the industry, and there's still a long way to go. I guess some recent changes, there has been a bit more progress in the application and resources that Stark have for recessed windows. And I think that is an area where the industry is slowly moving. But again, that's a conversation that's been happening for years now, us figuring out how to get windows installed properly in line with the insulation. The issue there for people that haven't come across that is to do with the fact that we've been so nervous about water ingress from the outside and the precedence of E2, which is external water, and how we deal with external water in the building code. And the reason for that is because we're all very, very paranoid about leaky buildings, because that has been very, very expensive for some people and heartbreaking for many others. So we tend to hang windows outside of the building envelope, certainly away from the insulation. And that means that the window is not thermally connected to the rest of the building. So we end up with a big thermal break around the window. So even now, if you have a double glazed window, a relatively good one, and even if you go to the extent of having a thermally broken frame, if you hang that window outside, or you basically get that window installed in the way that we have been doing it for quite a long time, then you're not going to get the benefit of that thermal break. It's a little bit hard to describe, but there are plenty of blogs and articles written about this, and you can see a cut through of two different window profiles, one with it hanging out more in line with the cladding, or in the cavity between the framing and the cladding, or the other one is what we call recessed, which is set back into the wall, which is very common overseas. It's how windows are typically installed in Europe and North America. But that means that if there is any fault in the window, or if there is any water leakage either from the inside or the outside, then there's a risk that that water could find its way into the framing. Now that's easily resolved, first of all, just having decent quality materials and installing it well, having the right seals and sills in place. So that's definitely possible to do. Many people are doing it, and there's significant thermal benefits of doing it properly. Anyway, that's a long way of saying that that's probably the one area that there has been some improvement on, and in a good way, since this chat with Benji earlier in 2023. But the rest is all still completely relevant. So here we go. Enjoy this conversation. I started out by asking Benji, what's the history of Stark and how they got started?
Yeah, thanks, Matthew, and really good to come along. Stark has a long history in windows and doors. Actually, we were the originally the sort of the founding fathers, if you like, have been in aluminium windows as a fabrication company since I think the late 80s, so sort of almost 30 years, just fabricating the mainstream brands, and over time became pretty frustrated with the lack of innovation, and the lack of freedom. If you're a fabricator, it's a pretty hard life. You do all the hard work, and the system suppliers seem to take all the profits. And I think, yeah, all of those still in that game would know what I mean, and we certainly know what it's like to be there. So that frustration eventually boiled over in around sort of 2010 to 2013, and we made the jump of designing our own suites, which was a huge, huge jump. Massive investment, massive amount of design and testing and all sorts of things. And we bought several suites to market. They were all just cold aluminium, because we didn't know better at the time. So that process took from 2013 through to about 2017, which I think is when when Stark, the company as you now know it, was formed, in about 2017. And yeah, launched our products then. And then after sort of pretty rapid growth for 3 years through to 2020, we began to have an awakening, if you like, about thermal performance and just how bad it was what we were doing. So we began to learn more about thermally broken systems. We began to be aware of the problems in New Zealand market with installation of thermally broken systems. And then H1 came along and kind of put the wind in our sails. So we doubled down on learning everything we could, and realized that even thermally broken wasn't really good enough for what New Zealand needed. And researched then UPVC systems, timber systems, kind of covered the globe figuring out what everyone does, and settled on a very lovely high performance suite of UPVC, which has is where we're at now. So that's kind of a short history, long legacy, but rapid sort of change in the last 3 years and the last 6 years.
Yeah, so you've got, it's a sort of a quite a fresh brand you have now, but with quite a lot of experience in the industry.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Want to go just a couple of terms there, because I took my what took me a while to get my head around how the window industry works. And you mentioned fabricators and aluminium. So what exactly is a fabricator as opposed to like a window supplier or a glass supplier?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the market in New Zealand is quite unique globally. Australia's similar-ish, but New Zealand's kind of out on our own. So how it works is there's what they call the prime die holders or the system suppliers. There's only really three slash four in New Zealand, plus us. And they do all the R&D and testing and aluminium profile design. They would then extrude those profiles, powder coat the aluminium, and then supply the aluminium sticks out to a network. I think there's about 600 fabricators, which are generally smaller, sometimes just mom and pop type businesses, although sometimes a bit larger, who are actually your local, who will make the windows, chop the windows up, sorry, chop the profile up and make it into a window, put glass in it. So those fabricators, that's kind of how the distribution works. So there's lengths of metal shipped around the country to these little fabrication shops who actually make the windows locally. The fabricator will buy the aluminium off his system supplier, and then the glass off one of the big glass companies like Metro or Viridian, and supply the labor and then deliver it to the builder.
And is the fabricator
Problem,
making choices about hardware as well?
not really, generally, and it sort of varies a little bit, but often the fabricator makes very little choices about anything. They have it all very strictly told them kind of what they can and can't do. And that's what we struggled with, was if you wanted to innovate, if you had a really good idea because you've been chatting to a builder and he said, "Hey, why don't you guys do this? It would save me a world of pain." And you'll go back to your system supplier and say, hey, we've got this cool idea. You just, you know, we need to have an extrusion that's like this or like that, or make a small change.
Yeah.
And your voice is, you know, one out of 200, and nothing happens. And I believe, Matthew, that that's why New Zealand got stuck in the 70s with our aluminium systems. Innovation died. There was just like a broken loop of innovation. The people doing the design were not connected to the actual market or the builder.
Right. And the obvious piece is the glass. How much do you have to do with that, or is that a completely separate supplier and a separate
market?
it's kind of
a separate market. It's almost like the two markets in terms of the aluminium or window framing and then the glass. They both come together at the fabricator. So the fabricators generally can choose whether they want to buy off Metro or Viridian or now AGP, or there's a few others. And in the main, they were all kind of they were independent, and you could just try and get the best deal. And it is worth pointing out that different glass can always go in different frames. So you could get a double glaze unit off anybody if it was 22 mil or 24 mil thick overall, and you could put that in anybody's window suite anywhere. So yeah, you're right. It's kind of two separate industries. Even from a association point of view, the Wiggans has, you know, the window, it's called the Window and Glass Association, but they have a window technical group and a glass technical group that kind of make separate decisions.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned having a bit of an epiphany as a company and realizing that you need to do something better around thermal performance. What happened there? What inspired that? And what was the revelation?
What inspired it? Well, it was around the time I joined the company. I mean, I don't attribute that directly to me. well, look, I didn't say that. But I joined the company around the start of COVID. There was a couple of us that joined around then who we actually came from outside of industry. And so I think the legacy you spoke of that, you know, has been in windows and doors for a long time, there's probably quite some embedded thinking there about, you know, this is how windows work and this is how we make them cheaper and better and whatnot, which is super valuable for us to have. But I think it was a couple of us coming from outside industry with kind of fresh eyes. We probably did some workshops saying, you know, if we were to innovate, what would we do? Maybe we went and looked at Europe and America and said, well, you know, what's happening over there? And what we saw there was just a world apart from what we were doing.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, we thought, well, maybe if the future, if we're behind Europe, then that's the way it will be heading. So we probably started to go, okay, if we want to be market leaders, we should figure out a little bit about these European systems. And of course, the first thing that hits you is they're all much, much better thermal performance. So we decided, well, you know, why have they done that? What's actually behind all this thermal stuff? And that probably kickstarted the journey. And of course, we all know that there's, you know, these problems with cold, damp New Zealand homes. And we realized as we researched that windows were a very, very big part of the reason why.
Yeah, and the frames, right? I mean, the glass,
particularly the frames,
double glaze has taken away a large part of the decondensation problem. You can still have not very good double glazing, but I've seen so many examples of where the condensation is forming on the inside of the aluminium, not glass.
And yeah, so that's 100%. And that's that funny thing. Like everything came together at once. We realized that innovation had been killed for 50 years. And that the systems we were promoting, actually I did it in my own home before this epiphany, replaced some 1970s aluminium sliding doors with brand new Stark aluminium sliding doors, a very proud moment.
Right.
And then I realized as I was doing it, I was like, well, there's actually nothing really different. They're the same. The wheels might be a bit, you know, roll a bit smoother and the hardware looks a bit cooler and the profiles look a bit cooler, but the technology in 50 years has not really changed.
Right, right. And that's put you in good stead now for H1 because you're sort of ahead of that curve, really, because a big requirement for that is thermally broken windows for most of the country. So
yes.
Is that's part of your your suite now, really? It's part of your main offering?
100%. So it's we're kind of not done with our epiphany. I think the more we learn about building performance, the more we realize there's you know, there's work to be done, and there's still problems out there that need solving. So we are beginning to see ourselves very much as a building performance company, not just a window and door company. And part of that is because if you look at the heat loss and heat gain kind of numbers of any house, with even, to be honest, whether it's a code minimum house or a passive house, nearly always the most heat is lost through your windows and the most heat is gained through your windows. So I kind of look at it and go, if you're in your home and you're stuffy and hot, it's because of the windows have let in too much heat. If you're in your house and you're freezing cold, it's because the windows have let out too much heat. So we've kind of become a building performance company, even if we only do windows and doors, because they're so influential on how that building performs. So, you know, I suppose we started looking at thermal performance. H1 put the wind in our sails, and then we've kind of moved, as you said before, on past H1 as well, going that's just code minimum. We can help you comply with code minimum, you know, from a cost point of view, but we would much rather talk about how to move past the code and into better and better performance.
What are people struggling with right now as we're speaking, sort of going into May 2023? I've got the last iteration of the H1 implementation coming up November this year. What's going on out there right now with in terms of architects and builders? What are they worried about?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think everyone's doing a lot of learning and there's a lot of education out there. My big thing is, and this is, I'm not actually really answering your question. I'm not saying what they're worried about. I'm saying what people should know that, and mostly they don't.
What do you want them to be worried about?
Yeah, what I want everyone to know, so here's my big moment, is that I think that we should be looking at H1, sorry, I'm just sort of gathering my thoughts, but the crux of it is the difference between schedule method thinking and kind of calculation method thinking. So what everyone's doing is thinking in terms of schedule method. So they're saying the last November change was windows, the May change is roofs and underfloor, the next November change is windows. I don't think that's a clever way to be thinking about it. Far cleverer way, and I think Matthew, the NZ Green Building Council's online calculator is a really, really cool tool to describe this. If we were on screen, I'd kind of show you how I use that tool to communicate. But by far a better way is to look at it and say your building is losing heat all the time.
Yep.
And each one of these changes is just a tightening up of that heat loss value. So as of last year, you could build a little home and it could lose, let's say, 300 watts of heat through its envelope. And what the November change was that came down to 250, and then what the May change is that comes down to, let's say, 210, and what the next November change is that comes down to, let's say, 180. That's how we should be thinking about H1, is a tightening of the amount of heat you can lose. And that sets you free from the constraints of, like, it's the window change, or it's the roof change, it's the other window change. Just design your building to hit the target.
Well, the other thing that's useful about that is it's focusing on what the heat is actually doing and the performance of those elements, rather than R values, which are kind of arbitrary because it's just a theoretical resistance of heat of a material, not necessarily a system. So to think of it in terms of watts per square meter is more useful if you then extrapolate that out to think of kilowatt hours per square meter of the whole building performance is a much more useful metric than, because H1 still essentially tied to building performance index, which is it's on its way out. I mean, that's going to hopefully be superseded in the building climate change framework by kilowatt hours per square meter. So getting used to those numbers and also seeing the proportion of heat loss through the various different elements, which that calculation method allows you to do, is much more useful to actually understand what's going on in the whole building.
Yeah, yeah, and it's still, I don't know, once you start thinking about it like that, it hits you every time that someone says, oh, in May I have to change my roof. It's like, it might sound a bit high-handed, but I go, that's schedule method thinking. If you were thinking about it in calculation method thinking, you'd say, in May, we're allowed to lose a little bit less heat. How you save that heat is up to you. Don't do it how the schedule method says. Do it in the cheapest way. Do it in the best way.
It's also acknowledging that you're building to the bare minimum that you're allowed to, and trying to squeeze to the very last moment that you're allowed to build to that standard, which I've been reflecting on is kind of just such a weird mentality. It's basically saying, how long can I carry on doing the worst that I'm allowed to? I mean, if you're being that concerned about falling on one side or the other of that deadline, that's basically what you're saying is how long can I get away with doing this bare minimum? You know, if my kids when they load the dishwasher, I get them to do it again. It's like, this is not a bare minimum kind of attitude is not going to be good for you for the rest of your life. So and same thing with or similar, the other issue I have with people trying to figure out how to put R6.6 in the roof, because that's absolutely schedule method thinking. And I quite like that phrase is because it's what it's saying is, this is, I'm not going to bother doing a calculation. It told me if I put 6.6 in the roof, then I'm good to go. And it's like, well, yeah, but if you're doing 6.6, firstly, that's really, really hard to do because you need a massive space or being very high density insulation. But there aren't many places in New Zealand where you actually need R6.6 in the roof, unless you've been quite deficient around the rest of the envelope, like your windows.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And look, one thing also that the calculator, the NZGBC online calculator taught me, was this amazing thing that happens with the diminishing returns from increasing your insulation. And it is so phenomenal. I'll tell you a couple of little stories, but I ended up graphing it, and it's I think mathematically it's what they call an exponential graph. So the more you increase your insulation, it comes to a point where less and less and less happens. And I like to think of it as, if you've got a roof with R3.3, that's what we're all quite familiar with. That's a it's a good chunky bit of insulation. That's all right. And what that's doing is that's actually holding in, let's say, 95% of the heat. So if you double that to R6.6, you can't hold in twice as much heat as you were, because you're already doing really well. And so that's how that diminishing returns come. So if you think you go R6.6, well, you think R12 or 13 would be twice as good. It's not. You know, R12 is almost no better than R6, which is almost, which is only slightly better than R3. And now what happens, and this is why we get excited, is at the other end of the scale, the opposite is true. So R1, interestingly, is smack in the middle of the exponential curve. So I'm drawing pictures with my hands, which won't come through. But R1 is about in the middle, which is you know, really good for a window, and you know, not very good for anything else. But what it means is that if you're below R1, which all of our windows are, the exponential curve is working in reverse, and you're losing an insane amount of heat. So what it means in practical reality, and this is what an architect told me, actually. She was using an H1 calculator, and she was failing the calculation method on a set of townhouses. And she was cranking up the roof insulation because she had, you know, read what everyone was saying. And no matter what she did to that number, she could not comply. She went up and up and up and up past six and kept going. And then she'd heard or she'd read one of our blogs, or she'd heard maybe one of our presentations. And so she went back and tweaked the window number just slightly from, you know, R.37 up to R.46 or R.5. Or maybe even R.55, which is about where we start. And instantly, she's complying by 25% over.
Yeah.
And she came back to me and she said, I think the calculator's broken because the roof number is not doing anything and the window number is sending me flying. And she said, I think it's broken. I don't know what's wrong. And that is actually what triggered me to graph this kind of diminishing returns thing. Yeah. And man, when you see it, and I do recommend, I can send you a link, or if you're out there listening, have a look on Stark's website under the blog, there's the graphic there. It's a real eye opener. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then sort of beyond calculation, you get into modeling. And one of the things I've noticed with modeling is when you start playing around with infiltration, that also has a big impact because we assume quite leaky buildings. And a big part of that leakiness now does come from windows that don't close properly. So if you have, if you can tighten that up as well, and have well sealing frames, then that's really going to help your overall performance.
Yeah, it does. And that's really awesome. And look, while I get excited about calculation method, I get much more excited about modeling method. And so I do agree. And air infiltration is really interesting. Of course, that's kind of not mentioned in the building code. So some people you talk to about it just don't engage, you know. Yeah. But of course, others do. And when you look at the numbers, and I think it was on the little graphic published by MB right at the start of their consultation, they had, I think, 15 to 20% of your heat loss is through infiltration. And I think it said 30 to 50 is through your windows. So I'm like, well, lots of the heat loss is through the air infiltration, is through your windows. And that's where I get that number, kind of 50% of your heat loss is directly through the windows, but up to 20% is also leaking an air leakage through your windows. If you add those together, you get 70%. And I ended up wondering what the rest of the envelope was even doing, or that it was doing all the work, you know?
So what's coming up next? There should be no excuses now for getting on top of H1 compliance all the way through to November and beyond. But what have you got coming up? What's big for Stark at the moment?
Yeah, what's big for Stark? Obviously, we haven't even touched on the installation method, and that's also because it's not kind of mentioned in the code. Well, MB did mention it and say that they know it's a problem and it's in the too hard basket for now. And credit to them, they are working or arguing with various different parties about it, all of those arguments which need to be had. So we've done a bunch of work, and I noticed that the rest of the market is kind of following along, or they'd probably argue that. But yeah, the window suppliers are coming up with what basically recessed installation details. So the important thing is that the thermal line of your window is aligned with the thermal line of your, or the insulation line of your wall. So that's kind of big. We've got our system is done and tested and performing and going out the door on a number of to be honest, every single one of our jobs. We don't do anything else. And we are working on some fairly significant townhouse projects. So that's really cool to see there's a full turn of the wheel here. We've actually got high performance products with a high performance install detail going into ordinary Kiwi homes. And honestly, these homes are not necessarily wealthy people's homes. They're just almost first step of the property rung, you know, low cost townhouses. So that's pretty exciting for us that there'll be regular Kiwis in homes with, you know, properly performing windows. So the install detail, that's big. And I think we've got a lot of exposure to go with in terms of getting that in front of architects, getting specified. There's probably a little bit more we can do in terms of kind of design guides and just removing people's fears around the system once we've got some of these case studies. That'll be cool. So you'll probably see a bit of a push from us, just keeping on making a bit of noise about the system now that we know that it's really good, it's tried, it's tested and true, the builders are happy with it. We've made a few tweaks after getting out on site, you know, on the first ones. So that's big. And then, yeah, I think probably in terms of what else is big for Stark, what I said before about, you know, being a building performance company, you know, we've just got our eye on, I suppose, other areas of the market that are underserved or where people struggle to get the product that they need. So absolutely no promises are there, but from my seat, which is kind of looking at the future. We've got our eye on whatever we can bring to market that will help Kiwis into better better homes.
Yeah. Now you've got full range of sort of normal windows, sliding doors that New Zealanders would expect. Do you do more European sort of inward opening windows, tilt turn, that sort of thing?
We do tilt and turn. And they're a bit of a funny one because we've found them really polarizing. Some people, if we show them a tilt and turn, they're like, no, I don't, you know, don't bring that stuff near me. And others, it's the only reason they come knocking is because they, you know, they really want a tilt and turn in their house. So we've ended up kind of not really being too pushy in either direction.
Right.
Kind of what we don't judge. So we have standard awnings and we do have the tilt and turn, and those can be full size doors, like an open in tilt door, which is pretty cool because it can be ventilating and its tilt function while still locked and secure. Which you can't do that on a normal door. From where I sit, and I'm looking at, you know, some bits of work for renovation in my own home. Only just recently, after having played with these things for like 2 years, have I gone, do you know what? I really do think that I'd prefer to have tilt and turn in my home. There are a number of reasons that it's better.
Yeah.
Not least of which is actually from a manufacturing point of view, it's way better to manufacture. It's has way less kind of, you know, maintenance. The whole thing is really sturdy. It's easier to make.
Yeah.
And it's more secure. It's got multi-locking points. It's more airtight. Functionality-wise, I think that's where most homeowners kind of start to disagree, because they're like, I don't want it coming into my house. It's going to knock the lamp off my bedside table, or it's going to get in the way of the curtains, or there's all sorts of funny things. But I've finally kind of crossed the bridge where I go, no, it truly would be better, and I'd rather have a tilt and turn.
But
we don't judge.
And what about PVC? You've got your PVC range now as well as the aluminium. How's that market?
Yeah, so that's the main of what we're promoting now. And to be honest, the decision to really double down on PVC was led from a technical point of view, and probably partly by me, by crunching the numbers and going, hey, once you understand H1, once you understand heat loss, once you understand that diminishing returns thing, you realize that you, to build best, you should buy the best windows you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And so it was technically led, but then when we got it here and we got it into our showrooms and experience centers, we were genuinely blown away. And I mean, all of us and a lot of our staff have dyed in the wool, aluminium, you know, aluminium industry lifers, who go, wow, this stuff is just better. It's just better. It feels amazing. It feels like nothing you've ever felt before. When you lock a French door or lock a window, there's, you know, no Kiwis have ever felt a window or door shut feel like that. So technically led, and then backed up by this kind of irrational desire or emotional desire here.
Right. And what about as a retrofit option?
Yeah, retrofit's very interesting. Actually, retrofit is where UPVC has been for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually been in the country and selling well since at least 2000 and some before. But it's had a low profile. I think it's just been, kind of in a small way to the retrofit market. We would be probably one of the first to go to new build in a really noisy way, kind of go to the architects and crunch all the numbers and actually have it kind of as a viable new build alternative. So it's a great option for refurb, basically. And to be honest, Matt, the very best situation is old white timber single glazing.
Yeah.
Because the color is generally the white UPVC is perfectly matched, and incidentally we do have other colors than white. In fact, our factory is full of black. There's almost nothing else.
Yeah, right.
But that old white timber is a very easy, and they call it an insert window as opposed to full replacement. So you don't actually take the whole frame of the timber window out. That becomes quite difficult because it's kind of built in. You just kind of cut the mullions out and take the sashes and the glass out and then build a new UPVC frame and put it back in. It was actually real estate photos kind of before and after of a house that had it done. And from the street, you would not know, but yeah. From inside, you would certainly know that it's way quieter. So the acoustic performance is fantastic. Obviously the thermal performance, but you couldn't aesthetically tell the difference.
Yeah, good stuff. We need a lot of that.
Yeah, a lot.
We do. Where can people find you?
As many places as we can be. Obviously, a quick Google search will bring us all up. In fact, if you Google kind of technical, what's the best R value for a Windows, we've got lots of useful blogs, and I think they pop up quite close to the top. Otherwise, we are based in Auckland, headquartered in Auckland. So we're here at, we've got two buildings here now, 2 to 4 Wilco Place in Wiri. We do have a growing number of kind of show rooms, experience centres and show homes kind of popping up here and there. We're trying to populate all those on our web. Quite a few builders have put the product in show homes, which is a really great opportunity to go and kind of touch and feel it. We've got another factory up in Kerikeri. So definitely the upper North Island is a really strong suite for us. And then, yeah, we're building distribution and resellers further in the lower north and in the south as well. So kind of we're trying to get it to a point where everyone in the country can get the benefit of what we have to offer.
Awesome. Hey, well, great to chat, Benji. Really exciting stuff. Not easy changing direction in the way that you have as a company, and to really change the emphasis. But sounds like things are going well, and look forward to seeing how they continue to progress in the future.
Awesome. Thank you very much for your time, and really great to come on. And it certainly is such an incredibly exciting time in the market. I mean, it's a once in 50 year change. Aluminium has been here for 50 years and nothing's changed. In the 70s, everything changed from timber to LE. And, well, I don't know if this is the change from LE to UPVC, but it's certainly a massive, massive change in the market. So really exciting and good to be on.
And that was Benji Simmons of Stark Windows and Doors. I'll put a link in the show notes, but you can find all their products and some great information. A lot of it written by Benji himself on their education page, and they've also got some projects and other great resources. Stark.co.nz, that's STARKE.co.nz. Reach out to them. I know that they've recently brought on a few new people, and they've got a great team out there doing things differently in the industry, as Benji pointed out right at the start there. They're sort of taking a look at how the industry has been served for windows in New Zealand, and they're doing things a little bit different, both in terms of their products, but also how things are delivered, manufactured and installed on site. So some really exciting stuff. Really great to see them going from strength to strength. Hope you found that useful. I'll also put a link to the H1 calculator that Benji mentioned. Glad that he has found that useful. I know that lots of people still are. And of course, the step up from that H1 calculator is going to the modeling method, which is even better. And there's huge uptake in the Echo energy model tool, but that's probably a topic for a whole nother episode, looking at the accessibility now of good energy modeling for the residential building in New Zealand. If you've got any questions about that or anything else or suggestions, feedback, love to hear it. You can email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com. Otherwise, I will hopefully be back again next week with another episode of Build Aotearoa.